Jonah chapter 4, verse 4. Then the Lord said, "Is it right for you to be angry? Is it right for you to be angry? Is it right for anyone to be angry? What right does a sinner have before God? Is it not correct that every one of us, through our sin, have forfeited all our rights? Is that not the way every human being stands before God? Is there not a verse in the Bible that says, why should a living man complain? A man whose punishment should be death. Why should that man, that woman, that person whose punishment ought to be death, if he is living, if he's alive, why should he complain? And here's Jonah, and he's very, very angry. Very angry. How should we deal with someone who's very angry? How should we deal with someone that's very angry? Well, there's three ways we can do it. We can say to him or her, you have every right to be angry. Or secondly, you could say to them, you've no right to be angry. But whether they're right or wrong, if we say either of these two things to them, we're in great danger of either building up their own ego on the one hand, or else be responsible for giving them a guilt complex on the other. But then there's a third way. The third way we can deal with someone who's very, very angry. What way is that? That's God's way. That's God's way. What's God's way? How does God deal with Jonah when he's very, very angry? Well, he tries to defuse his anger by asking him a question. Is it right for you, Jonah, to be angry? I always remember when I was in management, being put on a management course, and the particular course was how to handle an irate customer. And the key was, you always ask him a question, and you always ask him, what does he want to do? Give him the responsibility of making the choice, and that way he's got to start thinking. And from that point in onwards, anything else that goes wrong is of course his fault, because he's made the decision. You ask him, what do you want? What do you want me to do? That way you defuse it. You make him think. You make him responsible for everything else that might go wrong from that point onwards. And you know, that's God's way. What is it you really want, Jonah? Why is it you are angry? And you see, isn't it wonderful the way God can handle Jonah? He speaks to Jonah, saying, Jonah, you're very, very angry, aren't you, Jonah? And you see, God there shows him that he understands. And God also shows him he's prepared to listen to what Jonah will have to say. So there's poor Jonah. He's very, very angry. And he goes off to the east end of the city, and he builds a makeshift shelter. What for? What's he building his makeshift shelter for? Do you know what it's for? It's to hold a pity party in. You know what a pity party is. You know, we all have them. Poor me. Poor me. Well, there's Jonah going off to build his makeshift shelter to hold his pity party. He's behaving like a jilted bride who goes to dream of what might have been. And of course, Jonah's in the huff. Jonah's upset. He's still there. That's verse 5. Says, so Jonah went out of the city and he sat on the east side of the city. There he made himself a shelter and sat under it in the shade till he might see what would become of the city. He's still got this little hope. Well, maybe God will deal with these Ninevites the way they should be dealt with. And I'll have the pleasure of seeing them go up in smoke. He was looking forward to that sight, but he wasn't going to get it. But he builds his makeshift shelter. Isn't God patient? Watching Jonah there build a shelter to hold a pity party. Isn't God patient? Doesn't God just know how to handle Jonah? How about you? Are you angry with God? Jonah was angry with God. He didn't like what he was doing. He'd rather see the Ninevites dealt with for all their sins against Israel. And he's angry with God. Are you angry with God for anything? Are you? Well, God's speaking to you tonight. God's got something to say to Jonah, and God has something to say to you if tonight you are in any way angry with God. So what does God do? You see, sometimes something has to be done as well as said. In Jonah's case, something has to be said and something has to be done. What does God do? Well, you'll notice, as we've already noted, he prepares, first of all, he prepares a plant. And we noted last week, remember, boys and girls, this plant was a castor oil plant. It was a fast-growing castor bean plant that could actually, believe it or not, grow to 10 feet high very, very, very quickly. Isn't God good to Jonah? It is as if God is saying to Jonah, Jonah, your stupid homemade booth, it isn't going to protect you properly. I'll give a proper shade for your head. It's real protection. That's what I'll do for you. Isn't God loving? Isn't God kind to Jonah? And just in passing, isn't it interesting to note, Jonah's very grateful for the plant. Isn't that amazing? End of verse 6. So Jonah was very grateful for the plant. It's a change in Jonah, isn't it? Seems to be doing nothing but sulk in all the book we've read. But here, he's very grateful for this plant that God has provided for him. What's your plant? Has God been kind to you in some special way? Has he given you some unexpected blessing, as it were? When you've tried to sort things out yourself and you've just made a mess of them, your homemade shelter, and God has come to the rescue. Maybe he's given you some unexpected bonus or windfall. Maybe you've just received some unexpected good news. Some ways he's given you some sort of blessing. That's from God. Anything good you get from God. God has given it to you. Remember that. But you know, Jonah, it seems, could have made a very, very big mistake at this point. The big mistake is this. Jonah could have confused God's love and God's kindness for God's approval. He could have said, Lord, you've given me this super protection from the sun. I must have been right to be angry. God's vindicated me. God's endorsing and sanctioning my anger. Well, what a big mistake that is. What a lesson there is there for you and me to learn. And it's this: God is merciful both to the good and to the evil, both to the sinner and the saint alike. God is gracious, full stop. Gracious to good people, but also gracious to bad people. God is also kind to those who don't deserve it. And you know, that was a real, real big problem to Jonah. Well, then God prepares a worm. He prepares, first of all, a plant. And then he prepares this worm. And the worm is prepared for the specific purpose of gnawing at the root of the plant, the weed, the gourd, and destroying it. So that the whole plant, the protection, falls down. He's prepared the worm to destroy the plant that was such a comfort to Jonah. Isn't that amazing? But do you notice also, at the same time as preparing a worm, he prepares an east wind so that this to beat the sun on Jonah's head. Isn't that something? God removes the comfort which he had provided for Jonah. The very thing that was Jonah's comfort, God puts his finger on it and removes it. And it's God. It's God. Isn't that amazing? I ask you again, not just what's your plant, but what's your worm? What's the worm God has sent into your life? Maybe God's given you a wonderful job, and then all of a sudden, the company goes bust, goes into liquidation. Maybe God's given you a wonderful relationship, and then the relationship turns sour. Maybe God's given you a wonderful gift, and then something goes wrong with the gift. The very thing that you rejoiced in, the very thing that you may have thanked God for, God puts his finger on it. And God says, I'm taking it away. God does that. God can do it. And God does it intentionally. And God could have stopped it. It's not just God could have stopped the worm doing it. God actually prepared the worm to do this. That's what the Bible tells us. That's the Christian God. That's someone that we've got to learn to trust. That's the God we've to learn to put our trust in. What a challenge it is if you're in that situation. God's put his finger on something you rejoiced in. God says, now look, learn to trust me. I'm in this. I'm behind this. I'm actually doing this. But learn to trust me. When you can't work out why, when you can't work out the end from the beginning, learn to trust me. That's the challenge. That's the challenge of the book of Jonah. Now, you note carefully God's question to Jonah. Note it carefully. So many get it wrong. Well, I certainly got it wrong. God doesn't ask Jonah, It doesn't say to Jonah, you're angry about the sun beating down on your head. That's not what he says. God isn't saying to Jonah, you're angry about me creating the worm, aren't you, Jonah? No, that's not what he's saying. What does God say? God says, Jonah, you're feeling sorry for the plant, aren't you? And of course, Jonah right away says, yes, I am, and rightly so. And just then, of course, God steps in, so neatly as it were, and he says, and have I not got a right to pity Nineveh? Haven't I got a right to feel sorry for the Ninevites? Jonah, you feel sorry for an inanimate plant that hasn't got a soul, that you neither planted, you neither watered, you neither pruned. You're feeling sorry for that plant that came up on a night and perished on a night. Jonah, have I not got a right to feel sorry for and to pity Nineveh with 120,000 people that have souls? Didn't God do a good job of putting his finger on Jonah's problem? Why Jonah in the very first place ran away to Tarshish instead of to Nineveh? Doesn't God put his very finger on it? God's prepared all these things. He's prepared the wheel. He has prepared the weed. He has prepared the wind. He's prepared the worm. The four W's. He's prepared them all to point this out to Jonah. And as we noted in the very first chapter about Jonah, the whole book of Jonah, in the whole book, there's only one verse on the revival, the conversion of a whole city. It takes up one verse in chapter 3. And the whole of the rest of the four chapters is devoted as how God handles an angry prophet. These things are truly written for our learning. Well, I close with five final lessons that we learn from Jonah. Number one, God doesn't bother dealing with symptoms. God goes straight to the heart of the matter. He goes straight to Jonah and says, Jonah, why exactly are you angry? God knows perfectly well why Jonah is angry. And God knows perfectly well why you might be angry with him. But he can work in you. He can handle you. He can handle you better than anyone else can handle you. He knows exactly what your problem is. But he wants us to articulate it to him. He wants us to communicate with him. He wants us to speak to him. And you see, how did it all go wrong for the human race in the first place in the Garden of Eden? It all went wrong when Adam, our first representative, turned his back on God and said, I'm going it on my own. In other words, he broke the communication link with heaven. And God wants that communication link open again. He wants us to start speaking to him again. He wants to be friends with again. But he's got to get right through to the nub of the problem. He's got to put his finger on the real issue. Why are you angry? Articulate it to me. Start speaking to me. Start spelling it out to me. And God will heal. God will heal us if we start speaking to Him. And if we start speaking to Him about what's troubling us. Some people, when something goes wrong, they run away from God. But God's message to us is, listen, when something goes wrong, come to me. Start speaking to me. Turn to me. I can heal. So turn to God. Start speaking to God about your problems, about what's troubling you, about what's making you angry. Second lesson is this. God knows exactly, it seems, how much discouragement someone can take. And also how much encouragement. God knew exactly what Jonah's breaking point was. You remember we've noted it before. When the Apostle Paul got so depressed with the Corinthians. So much going wrong in that church. And he said, I can't go on another day, Lord. And God came and got a revelation to him and said, oh yes, you can, Paul. In fact, Paul, you can stay another year and 6 months. And he did. But he thought he couldn't go another day. God knows exactly our breaking point. And He will never give anyone too much. He prepares us for His work. What He's got ahead of us. But it's not just that He knows exactly how much discouragement we can put up with. But He knows exactly how much encouragement we can put up with. Because, and you know, it seems with Jonah, he could only have one day's encouragement. He seems to have been a pretty bold, arrogant character. I mean, we've just looked at the way how arrogant he is with God. When God's angry with him, when he's discouraged, when he's upset at what's happened, how bold he is. So God says, right, you can only cope with one day's encouragement with the gourd, the plant that was protecting him. You know, sometimes the worst thing that a person can have is prosperity. They just can't cope. The minute they get prosperity, God goes out the window. And so God says, I can't give that person prosperity. I can't prosper that person. That person thrives on problems. That person is blessed through difficulties. God knows our makeup exactly. He knows exactly how much good things to give us. He knows exactly how much problems we can cope with. Lesson number 3. God's mercy is so great, it confuses us. It confused Jonah. What was Jonah's problem? You remember? He said, Lord, you're going to save these Ninevites. They're so abominable. They're so wicked. They don't deserve it. But Jonah forgot was, well, neither did Israel deserve it. No one deserves to be saved. No one deserves to be forgiven. And I found myself often saying in situations, I don't know how God puts up with that situation. I just don't know how He puts up with it. I don't know how He can let that person, let that Christian sometimes carry on doing that. And the answer is always the same. The explanation is always the same. God is just so merciful. He's just so merciful. He's far, far more merciful than you and I would be. If you and I were in control, we'd say, no, that's enough for that person. That's enough. And that was Jonah's problem. He couldn't understand how God could be so merciful to a place like Nineveh. But God's mercy knows no bounds. And why don't you make full use of that? There's some terrible sinners in heaven, you know. Terrible sinners. There's a lot of people in heaven, you know. And you would never, ever dream of doing anything like what some of them have done. And they're in heaven. So why shouldn't you be in heaven? God is so merciful. It confuses us. He's so gracious, so loving. He doesn't stop at anyone. He doesn't stop at anything. If anyone, however wicked, repents and prays to God, He'll forgive them their sin and take them to heaven. It's real. It's true. Lesson number 4. God has a purpose of blessing in every dark providence. Do you believe that? Do you believe it? Are you going through some dark providence tonight? You don't know why God's doing it to you. Well, remember this. God's in it. God's behind it. But behind it, He has a purpose of mercy. He intends blessing. Probably, well, the greatest example, of course, is the cross, where God's Son, so holy, so just, was crucified. So wrongly, as it were. But oh, what blessing came out of it. Because of that, you and I can walk into heaven. But there's another good example in the Bible. You know, it's the case of Job. In one day, he lost 7 sons and 3 daughters. All his cattle, all his livestock. In one day. And the book of James prompts us, you know the kindness of God to Job. Kindness to Job. Yes. Look at the end. How did Job end? Look at the blessings Job got. God doubled his prosperity. God gave him another 7 sons and another 3 daughters. And God gave him twice as much livestock. And he was twice as wealthy. And that was God's providence. God's purpose, I should say, in the dark providence. So if tonight you're going through a dark providence, remember God's in it. But He's in it with the purpose and the intention of blessing. Ask for that blessing and be willing to wait for that blessing. You can't just snap your fingers and get it. But you can pray for it and you can wait for it and He will give it. God is in everything. And God can only do what is good. But His ways are past finding out. You can't fathom them out. And that leads us to the final lesson as well. Quite similar in a sense. It's this. God's great works are often hidden and unseen. God prepares blessings for us, and we don't know He's doing it. Tell me, could you see the whale God prepared being spawned? Could you see the plant, the gourd, being germinating? Under the ground, could you see it growing? Could you see that worm under the ground attacking the roots of the plant? God was doing something. God was doing something. But you couldn't see it. And you know, God's doing something today. But we can't see it. And always remember this. God is under no obligation whatsoever to let us in on the secret. Do you remember Jesus? He said, "My Father works and I work." But you couldn't see what he was doing. You couldn't see him working. You can't see God working. And you and I often find ourselves, especially in church affairs, saying, "God's doing nothing." We've got to be very, very careful when we say that. Because you remember the prophet Habakkuk was rebuked for saying, "God's doing nothing. Why aren't you doing something? Why aren't you answering my prayer?" God says, "I am." It's a dangerous thing to say, "God's doing nothing." God is always at work. And God works secretly. He works hidden. You can't see him working. As you couldn't see the worm under the ground working. As you couldn't see the whale being spawned at the bottom of the sea. You couldn't see it. But God was preparing something. It's a great word. 4 times you find it in the book. God prepared something. God is preparing things. God's plan is being unfolded. God's plan is being worked out. God is on the throne. God is good. And God's purpose and God's plan is blessed. And the book of Jonah teaches us so much of these things. May God bless to us his own word and his own truth. Let's pray.